Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, reporting for duty.
And now, for this week's conundrum, what we don't want to see in Star Trek 2017.
I think that's a great conundrum to tackle, and really fits in well with a lot of the developments we've been seeing so far. That's really getting, you know, a lot of fans excited.
And angry.
And angry, to certain, you know, to varying degrees.
Right.
You know, for me, both big news developments have me just on the edge of my seat. Of course, Brian Fuller, he is showrunner, which we've discussed in length before, but we've got some new hires on the crew here, Cam. We've got one, and I don't know how to contain myself at this point. Rod Roddenberry is going to be in the writer's room, apparently.
That's right.
Or at least he's hired on as a producer, a consulting producer in some capacity here.
That just means he's lending his name to the show, I would assume.
Essentially. And the
Which
other
is fine.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know even if it's worth mentioning, but some guy, Nicolas Mayer, he's apparently going to be contributing. I don't know. I think he was like a production assistant on one of the old movies or something.
Caterer?
Like I think so, yeah. So, yeah. I don't know, what are your thoughts about these two big hirings here,
Cam? So, Rod Roddenberry and this other up-and-comer.
Yeah. What do you think this up-and-comer can bring?
Well, let's be serious. Nicolas Mayer of Star Trek II and Star Trek VI fame. He's coming on as a producer and writer.
The caterer has fame?
So, I think this is really exciting that he's on board.
Rod Roddenberry, yeah.
No, I'm talking about Nicolas Mayer.
Okay.
Nicolas Mayer, I think, is interesting. I would be very curious how much involved he actually is.
Well, here's the thing. He did an interview, and it was explaining that he said, what my job...
Like, who are you, and how did you get this number?
Well, essentially, the interviewer is just like, well, what exactly does this mean, this consulting producer title mean? He said... you know what, if I'm lucky, I'll get to write a script or two in the first season. If not, worst comes to worst, I just sit in the writer's room and get to lend some ideas here or there about what direction they should go.
Right.
The other interesting thing that he brought up was that, you know, I guess Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, plays a bit of an inspiration for maybe where Brian Fuller wants to take the series. I think some people online have been taking it a little bit too literally, as if this is going to be some sort of continuation from the 23rd century, or there's also those quotes from like almost 10 years ago saying Brian Fuller really likes the idea of a Reliant-based ship.
Yeah, right.
I don't think this means we're going to see a 23rd century-based television series, but, you know, you can read into it as much as you want to over the next 10 months, I suppose.
Do you have any concern that that might mean a more militaristic Star Trek? Because, I mean, Nicolas Mayer was kind of famous for making Starfleet very military-like.
I would say so, but, you know, we went and combed through all those quotes that Brian Fuller had over the years, and he doesn't seem to be all that inclined in that direction. And the thing that I was thinking about that question you just posed just over the last, you know, week or so, and the thing that I do like about Nicolas Mayer's depiction of Starfleet, the militaristic aspect of it not so much, but doesn't it just seem regal in a way we haven't even seen Star Trek depicted?
It's the outfits.
Yeah, I think so. But even just, I can't help but think of the bridge design after Star Trek II, you know, original series era between 2 and 6, you know, like, it's just something, I don't know, because, I mean, when you go to the next gen era, that was all designed in kind of late 80s, but on a TV budget, it kind of screams kind of those 80s motifs in a certain way, and that influence carried on all the way through Voyager, and again, into Enterprise, but I don't know, I don't think Enterprise is guilty so much of those 80s motifs that I was speaking of.
It's more of that steel gray, early 2000s cinematography cliche.
Very much so. Yeah. But I don't know, I'm very excited about, look, if all Nicolas Mayer is doing is sitting in the writer's room, tossing a couple ideas, I think that's great.
I think anytime you can get sort of the best minds of like a franchise, kind of bring them back, even if it's just for a smaller role, it just helps lend it, I think, some legitimacy. like, I think it's really exciting right now with Star Wars having Lawrence Kasdan working. I mean, Lawrence Kasdan's had some real careers up and downs over the last decade plus with, like, Dreamcatcher and stuff like that. But it's exciting to have him back. And as long as it's not just, like, them handing it to Nicholas Meyer being like, let's see your Star Trek TV show. I think they need new blood making the show. But I do like the idea of bringing back some of the great talents to kind of give their ideas.
Well, I recall looking at a lot of responses online and people, I don't know, people were very excited about this hiring. There's always like a troll or two who is saying like, I don't want any of this old blood. I just want, you know, brand new blood. And I can, if the guy was being serious, then I can understand his argument.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is you're bringing in the guy responsible for arguably the best Star Trek film of all time. In some of the strongest outings that Star Trek has seen as well, even though his writing credit on Star Trek IV didn't necessarily make me rank it that high in our podcast episode ranking all the films.
Right.
But I don't know. I think it's great if he's there in the writer's room.
I think the difference is when you say the old blood, like if they had said Brendan Bragg is going to run the show, I'd be concerned because there's a guy who's done God knows how many hours of Star Trek at this point. Nicholas Meyer has done sort of 2.5 movies.
Yeah.
Like, he's not worn out. He's had 20 years to recharge. So I'm not worried about him just being burnt out without any ideas to offer.
And, you know, we get into this debate about old blood versus new blood, but we mentioned before, if Ron Moore was the showrunner of this, I mean, we'd be intrigued if Iris Stephen Bear was a showrunner.
Yeah.
I'd be down for that.
I would be very concerned, though, more, not so much from the aspect of them, like what I think of them, but more just like, do they have what it takes to make Star Trek interesting to a newer audience?
And here's the thing, I think here's the key difference though, is that Brian Fuller has been responsible for so many intriguing shows that we examined. You maybe weren't as big of a fan of them as say I was, but I mean, these are shows that are on, you know, critics' top 10 lists. You know, he's very well respected in the industry. The other thing that excites me is, like, there's news for his new television series that he's going to be running, American Gods.
Yeah.
Ian McShane was hired in the lead in that series. So yeah. It makes me very, very curious about who he's going to be landing, you know, as, you know, the leads in Star Trek. Apparently, it's going to be Tony Todd. that's what all the,
that's what Tony Todd says. Yeah.
You know.
I heard Rod Roddenberry's going to be the star.
Well, you know, you had mentioned, you know, getting the best and brightest names from the franchise into that writer's room.
Yeah.
So one of the things that people were saying when Nick Meyer was hired on is like, oh, this is just fandom, you know, fan service, you know, pandering, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, nah, come on. If you have the chance to get him on board, of course you're going to do that. Then a week later, they announced that Rod Roddenberry is coming on board as a producer here. And this one made me kind of... that made my stomach turn just a little bit, because to me, if you look at Rod Roddenberry's filmography, it's not exceptional at all.
No.
In the way that Meyer's or Fuller's is.
I enjoyed the Trek Nation documentary.
Right.
That's all I got.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I did watch Earth Final Conflict for at least, I think, the first season.
Yeah, my condolences.
The thing is, I have to be honest, I think it's a really bad show. And even like a 12-year-old Tyler, who was a big fan of Trek at the time, could not get into this.
Right.
The other thing, look, what they're trying to do essentially is lend some legitimacy to this project, get some hype going among the hardcore fans. They want people to stream the series and pay for streaming, at least the American fans.
It also doesn't help when, because, you know, Star Trek has kind of shaky PR at this point. You do not want sort of the family of that kind of created Star Trek saying, this is not what we wanted.
Yeah.
Because, you know, look at, I mean, the Tolkien estate was very unhappy with the Lord of the Rings films.
And those movies bombed.
Well, I mean, those movies were big enough on their own. But Lord of the Rings kind of wasn't in the shaky position that Star Trek is.
Correct.
You don't want suddenly, you know, Gene Roddenberry's family coming out being like, this is not what we wanted. This is not Star Trek.
But can I be honest? I wouldn't care.
You wouldn't care, but it's not what they want.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. No, it's not what the PR people there
and
want.
And CBS has such a long history with the Roddenberry family anyway.
Sure.
So it makes sense to me. I mean, I don't think Rod Roddenberry will be adding a lot to the creative process of this show.
And that's why I think it's literally... Okay, here's the thing. Nicholas Meyer said that, you know, if he's lucky, he'll get to write a script or two. Mm-hmm. If not, he'll at least sit in the writer's room.
If Rod Runbury's lucky, he might get to read a script or two.
No, he's going to be the new face of catering on the Star Trek series. Honestly, I don't know what Rod Roddenberry can really lend to this. I think he's going to be in the writer's room, sitting there, giving his thoughts. But here's the thing. He was quite young when, like, Gene Roddenberry died.
Yeah.
Gene Roddenberry also...
He's not that old now. He's in his, I think, late 30s?
I think early 40s.
Early 40s?
Yeah. So, the other thing is, Gene Roddenberry died... he wasn't well of mind at the time that he died. If you guys want unadulterated Gene Roddenberry, go watch seasons 1 and 2 of Star Trek The Next Generation.
More on that next week.
I just wonder if whatever influence that Rod Roddenberry has to bestow on the series, it's really not of much value.
I think he knows that because I've listened to actually Rod Roddenberry talk at cons. I've listened to him talk on the Mission Log podcast, and he's been very open about the fact that he didn't really understand what Star Trek was all about until really the last, you know, handful of years. It was only later that he kind of looked at his father's legacy and what he had kind of created. So I don't even think he's going to be hyper-protective from that front. I'll bet you he's a lot of his more enthusiasm. He just wants to kind of be involved and lend an idea or two. But I really don't get the vibe from him. He seems pretty affable.
Yeah.
He doesn't strike me as a kind of power-mad dictator. I think he's just kind of there for legitimacy and maybe he's a bit of a cheerleader.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I think you kind of... hit the nail on the head when you're talking about kind of a good PR move on the part of the studio here.
Yeah.
But it makes me go back and re-examine the Nicholas Meyer hire.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. He's hired as a consulting producer. He even said, you know, his job may just be to sit in the writer's room and throw an idea out.
Does that worry you that much, though? This doesn't really worry me.
No. It makes me kind of give more credence to the people that were saying, oh, Nicholas Meyer, they only hired him as a PR move. And I honestly think that's not far from the truth, though. I really do think that maybe it wasn't Brian Fuller who was rushing out and saying, hey, Nicholas Meyer, do you want to come on board? I think it was really the studio saying, hey, what can it hurt? Hire him on as a consulting producer. This will look great. And look, he's a talented guy. You're going to benefit from this.
Yeah.
I really do think it's more of the studio pushing that particular personnel choice.
The big question mark to me will be, should Star Trek 2017 succeed and get a second season? Is Nicholas Meyer still attached to the second season?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. And, well, let's discuss this a little bit further. You and I have chatted a little bit about this, but I just noticed, you know, there's a lot of resistance, at least online, to the whole notion of streaming or paying for a streaming service to watch Star Trek.
Yeah.
We're a Canadian-based podcast. We're not going to have access to CBS All Access. Do you think that's a misleading name for your streaming service?
It is when it's called All Access and most people don't have access. Yes, it is.
So, but here's the thing. I mean, it'll air on TV in Canada very likely. But here's the thing. People are saying, Star Trek deserves to be free.
Yeah.
I will never pay for such a service. I mean, guys, it's $6. Like, get over it.
Yeah.
What I'm really getting at, though, is that I actually think the business model, the more I think about it, it's actually going to work quite well.
Yeah.
Les Moonves, president of CBS, he's already said that 60% of production costs have already been covered because of foreign licensing.
Right.
Really what CBS wants is just to build up their library.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately you aren't paying $6 a month for, you know, Star Trek 2017. You're getting the entire Star Trek library. And as they start
pulling... the Big Bang Theory.
And the Big Bang Theory, God help you. Although a lot of Star Trek fans love Big Bang Theory, so...
God help them.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, they're going to start ripping all these Star Trek shows off all the other streaming networks.
Yeah.
So that's going to be your solution. You know, if you want to pay $6 a month to get all of the Star Trek... at home, there you go.
Yeah.
So it'll work out how it works out. I don't worry too much about people freaking out at this point.
Well, I do because I really just, they're aggravating me.
Yeah,
because,
I know.
Like, their argument is just, it's not based in logic, I'm afraid.
They aren't Vulcans.
Yeah.
They're Romulans. It's all emotion.
But here's what I'm getting at. You mentioned, you know, if it comes back for season two, I'm convinced it will be back for season two.
Yeah.
What I do wonder about is whether Nick Meyer will be back. We'll see. Yeah, that... it has yet to be seen.
It'll be Stuart Baird.
That'd be amazing. Well, I don't know. Do you think, you know, Nicholas Meyer would have the chance to, say, direct an episode or two? Or maybe. Do you think it's just way too early for us to
It's too early. Yeah. I mean, they didn't include anything like that in the press release saying he would direct anything. So, I mean...
Or, well, they didn't say he's going to write anything either.
I know.
So, Nicholas Meyer doesn't even know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Isn't that hilarious? Like, they asked him what he's doing, and he was just kind of guessing. He's like, I don't know.
That's showbiz, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why it really is, like, what I was saying earlier. It's a very astute PR move on the part of the studio here.
Do you think Rod Roddenberry will direct an episode?
Yeah. It'll be kind of like a mockumentary style episode. You know, that he's got that Trek Nation background, so
Trek Nation is solid. I will say that. And as much as we joke, like, Trek Nation is worth checking out, as is the Mission Log podcast, which he produces.
There you go.
So, you know what? He actually does a lot of really quality Star Trek content.
Well, in honor of Rod Roddenberry, for the rest of the episode, Cam, you can call me Ort Orton.
Okay.
Well, you know what? I think maybe it's maybe a good time to segue into the topic. We're talking about kind of our excitement about this Roddenberry hire.
Yeah.
And this so-called, I don't know, Nicholas Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
But what fears maybe do you have about this upcoming series, Cam? What do you not want to see as we watch this in just a little less than a year now?
Well, so many. So are we just going to shoot back and forth and give our ideas?
Yeah, you know what? Why don't I start with you?
Okay, well...
Go.
The number one, in no order, really, mine. This is sort of my list of tropes I think need to be kind of retired as we move forward into Star Trek 2017. Number one on my list is bumpy-headed aliens.
Oh, okay.
One of the...
xenophobic on your part, but...
One of my favorite things about classic Star Trek original series and sort of the best parts of Voyager, DS9, etc., is inventive alien design.
Yeah.
TNG far too often relied on the most lazy kind of bumpy-headed aliens, where it's just like someone with like kind of the bumps on that or funny ears. Like, I love the originality of the alien creations in the original series. And, you know, like, Voyager, Enterprise, DS9 could be really great too, but they tended to be focus all their efforts on aliens that were definitely going to recur.
Yeah.
Or play major roles throughout the series. Like, I love how the original series, you know, you have, like, the episode The Man Trap, where, like, the salt vampire shows up, you know, for, I don't know, like, 5 minutes of screen time. And it's such an iconic, great-looking design. I want to see more of that as we go forward. Like, aliens that are really memorable.
I think, well, you look at Michael Westmore, he's probably had to design upwards of, I'd say, 1,000 alien heads at this point. Going forward, I don't know, do you think Michael Westmore has a place in the next Star Trek series? Do you think it's sacrilege to even question it? Because honestly, I'm okay with him kind of being retired from this franchise and finding somebody new and inventive to come in. Like, I just wonder how many ideas he has left swimming in his head at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. That'd be curious. He may come on as like a consultant, perhaps. You never know how it'll quite work out.
He'll get to help catering.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would love to see Nicotero.
Okay.
Like, come in. Like, K&B. I think they would be really interesting.
Yeah.
I love a lot of their horror work they've done over the years, and I think they come up with really weird ideas.
Like, you don't watch Walking Dead?
No.
I'm still surprised that, you know, Nicotero's doing just kind of inventive, like, zombie designs six seasons in at this point. Like, there's still stuff that you go, like, wow, they haven't lost track of... you know, like, what the mission is here is making something new and different every week.
Yeah.
I'm impressed, genuinely. So, I don't... Yeah, if they bring something like that in, I'd be down. You know, honestly, I mean, there's just... There's so many other people out there. Why not give somebody else a chance and just kind of shake up the look of the franchise? I think that'd be great.
I want to get back to kind of the weirdness of the alien species, like, where they felt other.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't just like, well, they look exactly like humans, but they've got a ridge, you know, on their nose.
But there's just something so classic about... say the Andorians, like from their costumes, you know, back in the original series.
Tellarites.
I love them. It was great seeing them updated in Enterprise as well. The one thing I'm fearful of, though, is that they'll give them like CGI antennae. Those robotic antennae that they had on Enterprise, those look awesome.
Yeah, like, let's just, speaking of the CG, let's just keep the CG to a minimum, because I mean, we don't need also like I really like the Zindi. The Zindi are actually a good example of what I want to see.
Yeah,
where it's just like, let's see new species like we've never seen before. But some of the CG Zindi were a little iffy. Like the aquatic ones.
Sure. I mean, I can give it a pass. I can't. I gotta be honest though. You're saying keep CG to a minimum.
Yeah.
It's all CG if you're working on television at this point. So yeah, but here's the thing. You watch, I don't know, a show like Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. That premiered, I can't believe it, like more than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You watch those special effects, they still hold up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like, because a lot of the times I watch CG and I'm just like, yeah, that looks like a cartoon.
Species 8472?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about like what Star Trek on television is going to look like nowadays. Some people, again, these online folks are convinced it's going to look like some cheap web series.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you it's not.
Yeah.
I think that we will be getting good special effects, CG effects for this as well. Think about all the people working in, you know, VFX nowadays that grew up loving Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how much like heart and soul they'll pour in working on this. Just doing like unpaid overtime or something like that.
Yeah. Like, you remember that episode of Next Generation early on, where they had, like, those chicken fish things that, like, Cat Stevens or something played one of them?
No,
like,
no, it was Mick Fleetwood.
Or Mick Fleetwood, yeah. Where it's like, I would love to just see things like that.
Cat Stevens? You want more Cat Stevens cameos? I'm going to call you Cam Stevens for the rest of the episode.
But
you call me Ort, you're Cam Stevens.
Sure. But I would love to see more things like that. Just sort of that unbridled imagination, where it's not like, okay, let's focus all our, you know, sort of imagination on like a species like the Borg, which is going to become something that we bring back, you know, countless times.
I agree. I think there's so much room for just something that can blow you away. I agree. The bumpy headed aliens. I was watching episode Next Generation, Devil's Due, a few nights ago.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help but notice that the aliens there looked exactly like humans.
Right.
That was another thing that kind of irked me. Yeah. They did address it in the Next Gen episode. I think it was season 6, The Chase,
mm-hmm.
in which we figured out that all these, you know, Milky Way aliens that we're so familiar with, we all come from the same DNA, you know. So they kind of gave Westmore a good out explaining why maybe some of this stuff looked a little similar, so...
And maybe if they went with more kind of out there alien designs, we could kind of get away from that problem of the evil aliens always are the weird looking ones.
Which is something I think we'll have to address in like a future episode altogether, because that's something that bothers me. And it doesn't look as if they're correcting it in Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if you look scary, mm-hmm. then you're bad.
Yeah.
You know, which I did appreciate watching Galaxy Quest for the podcast a few weeks ago.
Right.
And there's those cute, adorable-looking aliens that were very, very scary.
Right.
Well, I don't know. Why don't we jump into one of the tropes, the cliches, that I think we can do without in Star Trek 2017. This is what I would call the flavor of the week.
Okay.
Essentially, character the episode is focused on encounters some alien and they get a relationship going on for just that week. You know, there's nothing that's ever going to come of it.
So like series 3 original series.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, just, well, that's when you get Kirk as his biggest horn dog.
Yeah,
where
it's just like a new love interest every week. Yeah.
To me, the reason why it irks me so much is because you can kind of see it coming from a mile away. It's such a good excuse to dump this character because, you know, the ship's just going to fly off elsewhere.
Yeah.
So it means, okay, the character has a relationship for 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
I get to kind of like shrug my shoulders for 1 week and know it's not going anywhere. And this is what I think Star Trek needs to get away from, is just kind of not being so invested in the character development the way it should.
Yeah.
I don't know. Cam, are there any like one-off love interests that you think needed to come back? Or was it just kind of like, who cares?
The only one that at the moment immediately jumps to my head as someone who just was one episode that you could have done more with in a different story would be maybe Edith Keeler.
Sure.
The story was structured in a way where she had to exit after one episode.
Yeah.
But that character, I feel like there's enough richness to her.
That was a good one.
That she, like, almost demands further exploration, whereas I don't feel like that. I feel differently about her than I would with most Flavor of the Week kind of characters.
Okay. The only one that springs to mind for me, and I think Edith Keeler totally works, is a character in Star Trek Voyager, the episode Counterpoint, the love interest for Janeway.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he was an intriguing character, and it made sense. But again, it's that whole cliche of, well, it's a ship. They'll just fly away, go elsewhere.
Yeah.
And they were very, you know, especially on Voyager, averse to, like, these interpersonal relationships continuing on romantically aboard the ship. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with having, you know, like, these relationships going on aboard the actual vessel itself, Cam?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think DS9 did the best job at combating that.
Yeah.
With characters like Cassidy Yates. And keeping Lita around, because Lita could have easily been a character they wrote out after one episode.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, she's like one of the leads of the show. Like, who'd have guessed that off, you know?
She goes from Bashir to Rom, and it all just works out, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I think, I'm not saying that they have to stick around the duration of the series, but I would like to see more attention paid to the, to if there is going to be, like, a romance, to make it more of an arc.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, let's not do something like Vash.
Or The Muse.
Yeah, well, The Muse was actually one episode. Like, Vash, you know, shows up and then comes back as, like, a love interest for Q.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, it's weird. It doesn't feel really well explained.
Eh.
So, like, let's get somewhere, you know, let's kind of hammer down, like, if they are only going to show up for two or three episodes, have an actual endpoint in mind.
But, okay, yeah, so, essentially giving them an arc, you know.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this. If I had to wager a guess, I would say that the captain of this series is going to be the lead character.
Yeah.
How do you solve that issue with a romance for the captain? They can't have romances with, you know, junior officers or, you know, members that are subordinate to them. So is the captain going to be doomed to having a kind of this Flavor of the Week romance every single episode? Or not every single episode, but you know what I'm saying.
Unless it's like a Sisko.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out for Sisko.
It depends on the circumstances of the show, really.
Yeah, but I mean, can you imagine this being anything other than a ship-based series?
No, but I mean, we're not even saying they have to have a relationship for the first section. Like, this could slowly build over the duration of several seasons.
The relationship?
Yeah, you could work it that way.
But what would be, just give me an example of, like, story-wise, like, how a relationship would build over...
Well, like, look at Cassidy Yates. It's not like she showed up and it was just instantaneous they were together all the time. There was drama to it.
No, but I'm just talking about, like, plot-wise. Like, I don't understand how that works for a captain if he's going from planet to planet every... And he's not getting involved with a subordinate
crew member. Yeah, that's the iffy part.
Like, I think that's why the captain of the series is going to be doomed to this Flavor of the Week sort of thing.
Do we know that it is just going to be a planet hopping every episode? Or could they have a central base that they come to and from?
That could be it. You know?
Like, I'm saying, like, it works for DS9 because there's a central location. Do we know that they aren't going to be on a central location from time to time?
Only Rod Roddenberry knows.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We obviously getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. But I just have this sense that they want to toss whatever ship it takes place on to kind of a remote location, and it really has to be at exploring strange new worlds, because I think the other thing that we've discussed in the past is we don't want to necessarily explore kind of the same region of space that we've been in for so very long. We you've said before, and I like the Klingons, but it's like, how much left is there to explore about Klingon politics in the Alpha Quadrant? I think they may... I don't know. I could see them falling through a wormhole and exploring the, speaking of the Roddenberrys, the Andromeda galaxy.
Oh, no. Kevin Sorbo.
If Kevin Sorbo was the Flavor of the Week, I'm sure, you know, the captain would go for it. But...
You know what? The captain could always have a holodeck romance.
Okay.
That could be the final frontier.
It could be another Michael Sullivan.
So why don't I jump on that cue onto another point that I don't want to see in the next Star Trek series.
Michael Sullivan?
Michael Sullivan, but more accurately, holodeck episodes.
You know, that was on my list as well.
Yeah.
The reason why I don't think we need them anymore, Next Gen Voyager did them to death.
Yeah.
I think we're perfectly fine with how Deep Space Nine treated the holodeck.
Yeah, like, to me, when I think about holodeck episodes, I'm just going to ask you, like, how many holodeck episodes would you hold up as being among your favorite Star Trek episodes?
my favorite.
I mean, not necessarily top 10, but, like, you know, if you were asked to name your top 50, like, is there any holodeck episodes that would wind up in there?
I like Ship and Bottle.
Yeah, that's the one that jumps to my mind, too. It's, like, the only one that I really, really like a lot. And it is not your normal holodeck episode.
No. It's good.
Like, I really like Armin Bashir.
Armin Bashir, yeah.
But that was would you hold that up as, like, one of your favorite DS9 episodes?
Maybe as a hidden gem or something.
Yeah.
Even though it's quite well known, not necessarily hidden. Yeah. But no, like, I wouldn't have it in, say, out of, like, the 728 episodes of Star Trek.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes my top 50.
If they can figure out a way to make a compelling holodeck episode that doesn't hinge on safeties failing, then, you know what, wow me. But until then.
You and I, we've been discussing the format of the series. Maybe it's just a series that takes place only on the holodeck camp.
That would be interesting.
I don't know. To me, just the holodeck, it's just the safeties constantly failing and people getting trapped inside. It seems like a death trap.
Yeah.
Why Starfleet hasn't fixed it yet, I don't know. I'm done with it. I think Enterprise proved that you can get rid of it altogether. And
The original series got by without it. And plus, you know, DS9 only went to it really once.
Yeah.
Other than slight story elements just to do with the holosuites.
Yeah, if there's the great scene, I think, of... It was Worf using the holodeck to help Cork out in a battle.
Yeah.
A batlet battle.
Yeah, you know. Stuff like that is fine. But you know what? This may not even be an issue because we don't know what century this show is going to take place in. They could be in the next phase of technology where holodecks are viewed as like we would view radio. Like, you just don't know.
Yeah, I this next phase of technology could be like TNG's The Game, where they're headsets and you just like stare into it. Or
because right now they're already experimenting with virtual reality, like really planning the future around virtual reality. Spielberg is working on a virtual reality project. The idea of a holodeck at this point isn't this like far off notion.
Yeah.
I think Star Trek should always be looking beyond what we are within the next maybe 20, 30 years of achieving. So I'd be more excited about what they could look at that maybe we haven't thought of.
I'm sure you've seen that meme before, but it's just interesting to see kind of how forward-thinking Star Trek is when they're showing, you know, how they had pads, you know, Next Generation. Now we have iPhones, smartphones. They had wearables on Deep Space Nine, you know, the eyewear that the Dominion would use instead of view screens. And now we have, you know, Google Glass. I think Star Trek, we need visionaries, you know. If we want to get consulting producers, let's get some futurists to maybe give us some hints about what the future holds in store. Let's move beyond the holodeck. I'm guessing this series takes place far from the 24th century.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a wager I'd be happy to make with anyone. I would hope that they get past the holodeck by that point.
Right.
For me, one thing that I also hope they get past, Cam, is that whole trope of, you know, the captain knows best. We see it every single series, in fact, whether they're dealing with a dumb admiral or a dumb alien, some backward species that doesn't know, you know, right from wrong. And it's really up to the captain to, I don't know, give a speech about gazelles or something like that. But
I think you could make a slight argument for Kirk. In the sense that a lot of the time it was McCoy and Spock influencing his overall opinion. That was not the case in the captains going forward. And definitely Shatner had plenty of episodes where he gave speeches to primitive, you know, species about life and what have you.
Yeah.
So he's not infallible. But I do think Kirk was a little more room for variety. But Picard...
Well, the issue was is like you couldn't really have subordinate members in the Rick Berman era of Star Trek. You couldn't have subordinates disagreeing with a captain.
Yeah.
So the captain's always right.
Mm-hmm.
Or else there's like an evil admiral that the captain has to, you know, defeat, or, you know, whether it's...
I'm just going
to
throw out that was one of the things I don't want to see anymore. I don't know if that's worthy of discussion really above that, but just the boring / evil admirals.
Yeah. Pressman was great.
Oh, yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah. beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But like, I don't know. It's, to me, it almost seems just very condescending in a way where, and this is what was interesting, I was listening to a podcast for an episode of Battlestar Galactica that Ron Moore had recorded, and he said that one of the things that he liked doing on Battlestar Galactica that he couldn't do on Next Generation or Deep Space Nine so much is on those Star Trek series, they posed like a moral dilemma or whatever, mm-hmm. and whatever the captain said, that was the answer. You know, right. they were telling you this is the right answer. We know right. best. Whereas Battlestar Galactica wasn't so interested in the answers. They were just interested in raising a lot of questions, making people think about it. I think that's much more intriguing thing to do than just telling you this is the moral of the story.
Yeah.
Making, you know, the viewers think about it as opposed to tell you, no, guys, genetic engineering is wrong no mm-hmm. matter what, mm-hmm. you know? So I think, I don't know, I'm done with, you know, kind of being talked down to right. a little bit in Star Trek. And believe me, one of the things that I love most about Star Trek is kind of how they raise a lot of these ethical issues mm-hmm. and make you think about it. So they have had success in that realm as well.
I mean, Sisko was actually interesting in that regard, in that Sisko...
Did he always know best? I don't know.
No, that's the thing. Like, gassing a planet?
Yeah, that's actually what came to my mind first yeah. as well.
And, you know, in the pale moonlight, did he know best?
He got the Romulans involved in the war. Sure. So, yeah. I don't know. But here's the thing. The reason why we're both going, sure, it's murky.
There's ambiguity to it.
Yeah.
Like, I would like to see more of that going forward.
And the only concern that I have is I don't know, Star Trek's supposed to be very optimistic, and I agree, that's one of the things that I love about Star Trek. I want them to give, you know, maybe some more shades of gray into mm-hmm. the story so that it's not just black and white. And I think there's room for a very optimistic vision of the future mm-hmm. mixed with, look, some moral ambiguity that, like, just people have to deal with. I don't like the idea of, you know, kind of the superhuman
yeah.
characters that we saw so much on, say, Next Generation.
Right.
So.
No, I agree very much. So, okay, so next on my list, solutions via technobabble.
This gotta get the plasma injectors onto the tachyon means scam.
Yeah, this no. is just... It's one thing that I realized, you know, like, I started with original series, went to DS9, and it's like going into sort of TNG and then Voyager, it's like you suddenly realize how much they amped up the technobabble in those two series in particular. I do not want to see this anymore. Yeah. Where it's just like the solution of the day is just have characters spouting complete gibberish.
And honestly, it amazes me going back and rewatching a lot of the episodes as we're doing research for podcasts.
Yeah.
I've mentioned it before. I mean, Deep Space Nine's not guilty of this so much, but you watch, like, no. Voyager and Next Gen. Oh, boy, is there just a lot of technical babble to explain away whatever problems.
Poor B'Elanna.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, B'Elanna is just, like, spewing it out left, right, and center.
And does any of it, like, mean anything to the viewer? Like, what do we really get out of this? Like, in honestly, I think it's bad writing, because what good writing is, and I think a lot of the writers were confined by these parameters that Rick Berman set out,
yeah.
Where, you know, you can't have character conflict, you know, within, you know, the Starfleet ranks.
Mm-hmm.
That's the entire point of drama, is to have conflict, competing goals between characters. So
right.
if you just have to explain away whatever outside conflict that was created in that episode by technobabble, it's bad writing altogether.
Yeah.
I have to praise Ira Steven Behr for really putting an end to that. I honestly can't think of one episode that reached its conclusion
mm-hmm.
on Deep Space Nine because technobabble solved everything.
I mean, J.J. Abrams did a good job at that too, stripping that away.
Yeah, I agree. And, well, I don't know, maybe I'm going to... go off on a little bit of a tangent.
Okay.
Going back to a very earlier conversation we had in this episode,
mm-hmm.
though, somebody pointed out that so far with the hirings that we do know of on Star Trek, we have, you know, Rod Roddenberry maybe representing the Roddenberry name from the original series.
Right.
We've got Nicholas Meyer from, you know, the film series.
Mm-hmm.
Fuller from, you know, the 90s era. And then Kurtzman, of course, from the rebooted J.J.
Mm-hmm.
Abrams era. Does this mean anything to anyone, Cam? Or do you think it's purposeful on the part of the studio just to win over as many fans as possible?
It's tough to say. It's so tough to say without knowing anything about what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, if the show comes out and it's like feels like an amalgamation of everything from all the different eras, then we'll be like, yeah, I get it now. But if it comes out completely original and new, we'll be like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think maybe the fear among some fans might be too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, I mean, if Brian Fuller's the showrunner, he is the head honcho there.
Yeah.
I think Kurtzman is way too busy to worry about this show on a day-to-day basis.
He is way too busy. He's directing the Mummy reboot right now.
Yeah.
He's got his other shows going. He's got other projects he's developing. I mean, he wants to start in a, you know, he's a sort of an aspiring director at this point. He's done, he's already directed a couple things. He did that, was it The People You Know or something with Chris Pine?
Right.
I think that's what it was called.
I think it got really bad reviews.
It did, yeah. No one saw it. But, you know, he has his Mummy reboot. Like, he wants to get into the blockbuster directing arena. He was attached to the Venom spinoff for a long time, for the Spider-Man spinoff.
He's not so much into the original ideas, is he?
No, he's not. He's not a visionary.
Okay.
So, like, I just feel like he's way too interested in being a director to be spending that much time producing TV shows. Like, I mean, J.J. Abrams right now is not that involved in the TV shows he's producing.
No. And honestly, look, if we've got Rod Roddenberry sitting in the writer's room, I don't think he's
going to... Sharpening the pencils? Like Miri?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be, like, influencing the show in a huge, huge way. So, yeah. I'm not so worried about, this problem with too many cooks in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, going back to what you were talking about earlier with Technobabble, I don't get the sense that, you know, Brian Fuller wants to explain everything away with Technobabble. We watched a lot of his recent episodes, we watched a lot of his episodes recently.
Yeah.
I don't see them, you know, dependent, like the resolution,
right?
At least dependent on Technobabble.
He is from the Voyager world, though, so heavily. So, well, I hope not. Hopefully, you know what? He didn't like that at the time either.
Speaking of the Voyager world, Cam, yes. Something that I don't want to see.
Yes.
And I think, out of all the series, Voyager is guiltiest of this.
Chakotay?
You're right. I don't want to see... I know they've been begging for it. I don't want to see Robert Beltran in the new Star Trek series. Other than that, the giant reset button.
Yeah.
That is something that, you know, Voyager... all these crazy things happen to characters. Mm-hmm. Neelix tries to commit suicide, and they never talk about it ever again.
Right.
The Voyager goes through the Year of Hell.
Yeah.
And Janeway decides, I'm going to go kamikaze style and ram into Anorax's ship, blow it up, and that resets the timeline.
Yeah.
It's literally a giant reset button.
Right.
Cam, does this trope bother you?
It does. In certain elements, not as much. Like, I'm a fan of the original series, which obviously hit the reset button every week.
It was a different era.
But it was also a mild reset button. You could just believe they were on to the next adventure.
Sure.
It didn't feel as sort of like blatant as a lot of the later series did.
Right.
Where it's like major shattering character developments.
O'Brien is sentenced to, 40 years in prison in his brain.
Yeah.
And he never talks about it after Hard Time aired.
Yeah, so like I guess it doesn't bother me as much. But I would like kind of like, I don't necessarily want the show to be ultra serialized.
No,
neither
do I.
I would like a loose overall continuity. Like if something happens, have that affect the character going forward. Like say like a Bashir, in DS9.
Yeah.
You know, he's revealed as like having superhuman abilities. That carries through the series. It doesn't mean that every episode has to follow that arc. It just means that it's kept as a continuous thread.
It's interesting, Stig Elfadel said that he hated that character development, and whenever he had to read lines that had anything to do with it, like him sounding smart, he would purposefully like blow his lines or act in a really, really boring way. There's a particular scene that I remember from like the season 6 opening Dominion War arc where, I don't know, I think they lost warp drive or something and they're asking him to calculate how long it would take to get back, to Federation territory. It'll take approximately 6 years, 5 months.
Okay.
Like you could tell he was just doing it like he didn't care.
Even though that's what made that character really interesting.
Well, I loved his parents coming on the show and just like that explained so much about like his character even then. So, but I think they handled it perfectly. It was a big revelation about the character. It wasn't like every single episode, like they were announcing he was genetically engineered, but like when it mattered to the character when it mattered to the plot, it was brought up. It wasn't just forgotten. It would have been bizarre if they had forgotten all about it after Dr. Bashir, I presume.
Right.
But they devoted, like, other episodes to bringing on, like, other genetically engineered, humans. Yeah. It was great.
I want the show to jump around and kind of be kind of closer to what we, like, love about Star Trek, where it's different types of adventures episode to episode, different types of genres, but keep the characters consistent. Like, if there's a major shattering development in one of their lives, have that continue and influence the way the character is written. That's, to me, more important than, like, any sort of real hard serialization.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's a very important distinction.
I don't need Breaking Bad Star Trek. You know what I mean? Where it's one big story.
I don't want that myself. And the thing is, like, that's the direction television has gone, because I think a lot of it... Watch Netflix. That's all based on the binge-watching model. Mm-hmm. So when Netflix produces, like, their own original content, I think... I don't know. They don't give their creators, like, too many, mandates. Mm-hmm. But it's... The idea is, like, go tell one big, long story.
Yeah.
I don't want that from Star Trek, though. Like, no. I like the idea of having, like, these kind of self-contained episode-to-episode stories, but, like, these ongoing character arcs. And I think that's very important to Star Trek going forward, is a big focus on the characters. And let's have, like, some crazy, cool adventures, week to week. I genuinely thought that season 4 of Enterprise was great, and that, you could have extended, plot arcs that would go, 3 episodes and resolve.
Even the Zindiar did find ways to kind of put in new stories that weren't necessarily about continuing the Zindi storyline.
I think that totally works for me going forward.
Okay, well, next on my list, this kind of jumps off of what we've just been talking about, and that is a rigid episode structure.
Right.
Where every, like watching a lot of Voyager, TNG too, a lot of the episodes follow a very, very set structure. And I would like to see Star Trek become a little more playful with that. You know, kind of bend the episode to what type of story they're willing to tell. Because I think the idea of kind of giving people the same manufactured type of episode over and over, with different characters slotted into spots, an A story, B story, that sort of thing, it's kind of gotten old.
I don't have any fears of this with Brian Fuller leading the way here. Because, television's grown up so much since Star Trek was last on TV. I think Brian Fuller has proved he can work within this new sort of medium. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you just look at the style of Hannibal. Like, I think the new Star Trek series is going to look different from any other Star Trek series that's come before it. But even just structure-wise, I'm not worried about that. Like, I think it's you are correct. It's you kind of know what to expect.
Yeah.
When you tune into, you have your teaser. Mm-hmm. The inciting incidents.
Yeah.
You come back from the title credits, and you kind of know the beats to expect from a Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think moving away from that is something we need to do at this point.
It's not something I'm ultra worried about, but it's something I wanted to point out as being like, let's not go back to that. Because I feel like that's something that a lot of very, very, very casual fans probably gave up the show eventually over. Just, getting kind of bored of it.
I don't know. I've got a couple bullet point thoughts that I have. Like, I'll just do like a rapid fire round and jump in for any of these tropes and cliches that you think we can move beyond, Cam. Exploding consoles. I don't need to see anybody get, blown away by an exploding console ever again.
That's tough, because so much of Star Trek, like the iconic battle scenes, is the kind of the bridge shaking and things sparking.
If lightning hits your home, Cam, does your computer blow up? If you drop your iPad on the floor, do sparks shoot out?
No, it doesn't, but it's not 23rd, 24th, 25th century technology,
It's less advanced.
Yeah, it's more likely to kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down with that. I would be completely indifferent to that changing.
Okay. Another thing I don't want to see anymore, lame fights.
Yes, that is a huge one, because I was just watching an episode the other day for the episode we're going to be doing next week, which, folks, is going to be good.
Oh, yeah.
But
we'll even have a special guest appearing on that one, a very special guest.
So I was watching a Worf fight, And it's so brutal. So brutal to watch these war fights in TNG. DS9 actually did a little better. But yeah, the fight choreography in modern TV is much better.
Don't you feel as if you could step into any one of these fights and just kick the ass of whoever's in it?
Yes.
You know?
Except for Worf in that episode where he just keeps killing a Jem Hadar.
Oh, yeah, on Deep Space Nine.
That
one's
pretty good.
But yeah, here's the thing. I think it's time you get like a A-class fight choreographer. I want to see a badass Bat'leth fight at this point. Yeah. I've never really seen that before. The best we've ever had was Worf versus Gowron. Let's just see something that just, I don't know, maybe blends different styles of martial arts together, or I don't know, just something to blow me away. I've never been blown away by any hand-to-hand combat scene. I think Into Darkness probably had the most memorable one.
I wouldn't
say it's the most successful one.
No, it's not a very interestingly shot sequence. But you get to see sort of the viciousness of what the Klingons could prove to be like in combat.
I was thinking about Kung Fu on the garbage trucks.
Oh, well, of course. That was the greatest scene.
Yeah.
I agree. And you know what? Like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which often looks like complete garbage, has had fight scenes that were, like, really hyper-kinetic and exciting. So if they can do it, Star Trek can do it.
Is that, Agent 46 or whoever?
I think so, versus May?
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, so, like, they've proven capable of doing it, so Star Trek can... Let's not get out of that sort of stilted, awkward, 45-year-old character actors kind of lumbering around each other without any fight training.
Yeah. One last one on my little lightning round here, and then I'll throw it back to you, but I'm kind of sick of Planet Earth. I don't really need to visit it that much. Look, I already live here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get away from Earth.
The shows have generally been pretty good about that, though, haven't they?
You know, even on, like, Next Gen, they return to Earth fairly... quite a bit. Same with Enterprise. The only one we didn't see much of is Voyager, for obvious reasons.
DS9.
But even Deep Space Nine, we went to Earth a couple times. Yeah. And it's just kind of like, I'm kind of... I don't think they pounded into the ground.
No, I never found it aggravating in terms of the shows. It's the movies where we so often wind up on Earth. Like, to me, that's much more of a pain.
I think we did the math, and I think, like, literally half the movies, or maybe like 7 out of 12, have had scenes take place on Earth.
Yeah, or somehow Earth is tied into the overall plot or something like that. Yeah. I agree. When it comes to the movies, that's a problem. The show, a lot of these shows were like, if we're talking about the previous series, were like 26 episodes a season, like, and multiple seasons, so I didn't really notice that, you know, there was maybe, say, 10 Earth episodes.
Right.
It was like, whatever. There's, you know, tons of other episodes. But if it is, say, a 13-episode run, and, you know, we spend 6 episodes on Earth, then I'll be pretty pissed.
Yeah.
So, no, I agree, yeah.
Cam, are there any other tropes or cliches you don't want to see in...
Okay, well, I've got two left, and I've got a quick one, which I'll hit now, and then a longer one, which maybe we can talk a little more about.
Okay.
So, the quicker one is obsession with 20th century pop culture.
Yes. Tom Paris, I'm looking at you.
I do not want any more scenes... ever. Like, I feel like I can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
Them, like, just having this, like, you know, in the 20th century, you know, there was a jazz singer. Oh, my God.
But, like, what are the writers trying to accomplish with these depictions here? Like, are they trying to make, you know, the viewers happy? Like, oh, yeah, we have not been forgotten about? Or, yeah. I don't know, like, what do you think this really does accomplish?
I don't know. It's like, you know,
to me, it takes me out of the series.
It feels awkward.
Yeah.
And, you know, they will often reference things like Shakespeare or Herman Melville.
Yes. Both those 20th century greats.
Well, no, but I'm saying, like, or Charles Dickens. Like, they'll reference the classics.
Yeah.
And when they keep doing this thing with the 20th century, it's like they almost want to try and almost prognosticate about what the classics of that era will be. But it always feels really, like, pandering and just cheesy.
Yeah, especially
movie night on the Enterprise.
But I don't know. To me, it is very annoying where, like, Tom Paris apparently knows everything about the 20th century.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, like, what a coincidence. The show's filmed in the 20th century and you know everything about it. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm much more intrigued. Honestly, I'd be much more intrigued by, like, what are the pop culture references of 2075? Yeah. You know, like, what would that hypothetically be?
Yeah, like, introduce us to what could be futuristic music or something like that.
I want the crew to be jamming out to, like, Brock music, or, you know?
Like, it's so strange that, like, on TNG, like, Riker's always playing, like, 20th century jazz music.
Yeah.
Like, come on. You're telling me there's not, like, I don't know, 22nd century jazz music he may have been influenced by as a kid, or some from his own era?
Or why not pick up a lyre and...
Yeah, you know, yeah. Anything like that, just please get away from it. Or go completely shameless and have tie-ins with popular products of the time. So, like, just have them be like, hey, I'm listening to the Kanye album. Things like that where we can just, like, laugh at it.
No, it has to be, like, something that's so, like, specific.
Batman, you know? V Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. It's weird. So I'm rewatching, like, Sopranos right now.
Yeah.
The episode I just watched was filmed in 2001,
yeah.
And they're making references to Survivor,
right?
Which at that time must have been such a very, very, like, flash in the pan sort of idea.
Yeah.
15 years later, Survivor's still in the air, so it's amazing to me that a reference like that actually endures.
Yeah.
I want Star Trek 2017 to be making obvious references that will not endure, like, say, you remember when Donald Trump ran for president? You know, like,
yeah,
stuff like that. That'd be hilarious.
Okay, well, my last one that I had was no excessive Borg, Klingon, or Vulcan stories.
You know what? Yeah, I had that on my list as well. I actually just wrote Borg.
Yeah.
On
I know that's sort of your favorite target is the Borg episodes because of all the Voyager stuff.
I mean, look, we mentioned, I think, a few weeks ago, if they reinvent the Borg in a really cool way or do something interesting with them, be it. But I don't need to see the Borg as they were depicted in the final seasons of Voyager. Been there, done that.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, I'm fine if they want to have an episode featuring Vulcans, featuring Klingons, featuring Borg, whatever.
Or characters.
Yeah.
Like that's...
That's fine, but I just don't want to see big bads, like, of those three, or you know, Vulcans wouldn't be big bads, but just, like, tied so close to the series where we have to constantly have Vulcan stories. I feel like we've done those three to death. Have the odd episode, maybe, or a character, but let's move forward. Do you even want to see, like, a big bad alien species in the series? I don't know how I feel about that. After seeing things like the Suliban get pissed away, you know... What are those? I always blank because they were so friggin' boring. But the aliens with the bad hair in Voyager.
Oh, Kazon.
Kazon, thank you. I always forget their names, even though sitting through hours of listening to the Kazon. But, like, I like the Vidians.
Yeah.
You know, the Vidians were at least interesting. But, like, you know, I'm just tired about hearing about these big bad aliens over and over again, especially when they don't work.
No. I here's the thing. I think... It'd be much more interesting to see one particular antagonist as opposed to, like, this, like, big group of evil aliens. I don't really like the idea of, like, one group of aliens, they're just evil. Like, I think it's far more interesting if they simply just have competing goals.
Yeah.
I kind of get that a little bit, like, the Romulans often kind of verged on that evil territory, but you could kind of understand that they have their own agenda there,
right?
You know, one thing that I do want to touch upon with what Nicholas Meyer said, though, is you know, when he said that the Undiscovered Country might be kind of an influence on the new series, my thought is that I do wonder if we're going to enter a Star Trek series that is part of a new era of peace around the galaxy, where maybe the Klingons, the Romulans, we're all united.
I would like that, honestly.
I think that's far more interesting than kind of these political machinations that we have going on at the moment in the 24th century. Borg? Why not? Yeah, look, spoiler alert, the Borg are weakened by the end of Voyager. And I think I mentioned a few weeks ago, it'd be interesting if we saw, like, these mini collectives formed. I don't know. Like, just where, hey, sure, maybe the Borg aren't adversaries anymore.
Right.
And there's just something else. The human condition is what needs to be explored further. And maybe that's why we're off away from Earth, away from, you know, this home base where the captain can get his love interest, you know, stationed or something. Like, maybe we're far, far away. I don't know.
Or if there is an ongoing sort of alien conflict, it's tied to, like, a misunderstanding or a difference in culture. It's not like they're trying to, you know, gain a super weapon or something along those lines.
Yeah, I don't care about, like, I want to take over this planet. Yeah. It's just like, okay.
It's more about a philosophical difference. Yeah,
I think that's far more interesting than just the just seeking power.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, okay. I mean, I've seen that from pretty much half the villains that have ever appeared on screen in any sort of, you know, media.
That's one of my favorite things about the original series is, while you could say, I guess, the Klingons were the big bad of that series, they only showed up in a small handful of episodes.
Yeah.
Say, you know, Romulan showed up in a couple. But, like, even, like, you know, you've watched, like, the Enterprise incident with the Romulan commander and Spock. If the Romulans are the villain, and you've seen Balance of Terror, actually.
Yeah.
In both cases, the Romulans are portrayed as fairly sympathetic characters.
Yeah.
They aren't, like, sneering big bads.
They
ain't the Suliban.
No. But it is interesting watching, like, Next Generation. They go to the Romulans a lot more than I ever remembered. Yeah. I was like, wow.
The Ferengi weren't working out. They had to do something.
Yeah, but I think the Romulans are interesting. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you had mentioned, you know, a while ago that it'd be intriguing to see a Cardassian on the bridge.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's new peace between, or look, if the Romulans, Klingons, and Federation are all united, I don't know, maybe there's a Romulan on the bridge or something like that. Like, originally, like, on Deep Space Nine in the Search, parts 1 and 2, which opened up season 3,
mm-hmm.
there was the Romulan engineer who is in charge of the cloaking device. She was meant to be a recurring character.
Right.
That would have been, it kind of bugs me that never came to fruition.
Yeah.
Instead, the actress Martha Hackett, she ended up becoming Seska on Voyager, so you got that.
It's something.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the idea of, you know, old enemies becoming new friends. And I think that worked out well with Next Generation and Deep Space Nine with the Klingons. You maybe don't agree quite so much because I think you got bored of the Klingons Honor.
Yeah.
Worf's Honor.
I got a little tired of the Worf's Honor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's... I just would like to see sort of a less simplistic view of, like, the quote-unquote evil aliens.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I have a hard time imagining a more interesting, big, bad alien than what the Cardassians were on DS9.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like that was the pinnacle, and we saw them try and replicate that since, and it just never really worked out that well.
Well, I think the key to this and why I'm very excited about Brian Fuller's... He wants to go full speed ahead. Like, I think he wants to take what made Star Trek great in the first place, shed some of the tropes and cliches that weakened it in a different era of television, and just make something that's going to, I think, really blow us away. I think what we're going to get... I at this point, with Nicholas Meyer coming on board, Brian Fuller as showrunner... My expectations are getting way too high for this series, but it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, oh, for sure. It's been an exciting time. Now's the point where we get to, like, you know, prognosticate and try and guess what it's going to be, and it's really exciting. And then we're going to see a trailer, and it's going to look terrible. And then we'll do, like, our mournful episode talking about everything that could be going wrong.
It's like, did they hire the team from Renegades to do the special effects?
Ooh, ouch. So on that note, I think our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Also, leave us a review on our iTunes page. We would appreciate any of the feedback on there. Your ratings help us get a better listing on the iTunes Star Trek podcast page, which will in turn give us internet fame, riches, and ultimately power.
Especially riches. But yeah, leave us a review and we'll read it out loud, or send us an email. We'll read it and discuss it as well. We'd love to hear from all our listeners, or even a voicemail.
Yep.
So
you can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vidian on the Bridge in 2017, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's Reportin as in Orton. or else you can spell it REPORTONN as in Nicholas Meyer.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Complete.